I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, one of the world's wealthiest women takes on poverty around the globe. But first, every week we check in with our correspondents around the globe for our dispatches segment. This week, we go to Trinidad. A recent alleged terrorist plot to attack JFK Airport in New York is raising concerns about the possible rise of Islamic extremism in the Caribbean. U.S. officials have arrested four men in connection with the attempt, three of whom are in Trinidad. In a moment, we'll speak with a counterterrorism expert who's been tracking the question of whether terrorists have made inroads in the Caribbean. But first, I'm joined by NPR's Julie McCarthy, who's been covering the story over the last few days from Trinidad and Guyana. She joins us now from our bureau in Rio de Janeiro. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Julie, who are the four men in custody, and why does the U.S. government think they might be terrorists?
Among these four, you have basically three Guyanese nationals and one Trinidadian. There's also an American citizen who happens to be of Guyanese origin. He is in New York City. He is a former air cargo handler at JFK Airport. His name is Russell DeFreitas, and when you read the U.S. complaint, he seems to be the heart of this alleged conspiracy. He is described as someone who has harbored a sense of resentment against the United States, principally for its activities in the Middle East, and sought a way to, quote, get back at it, and enlisted the help of a, quote-unquote, source that the U.S. authorities had actually embedded to learn more about this alleged plot. And he, through the course of many months, began in 2006, takes this source, this FBI source, on sort of a long and according to the U.S. complaint, rather detailed plot and plan in which they were going to try to blow up the oil pipelines that lead into JFK. Along the way, he becomes affiliated with these people in the Caribbean. What you have, one of the most enigmatic people is a gentleman by the name of Abdul Qadir. Abdul Qadir is a Guyanese. He is a former member of parliament. He was a municipal mayor. He was a very upstanding citizen in his town of Linden, which is the second biggest town in Guyana. He's alleged to have been brought into this plot as someone who was, as a civil engineer, giving them advice on how one would explode things. And he also is alleged to have said that the object should be on economic damage and not to damage of human beings. Of course, this plot also was alleged to, by the prosecutors, alleged to have been something that could have been worse than the Trade Tower bombings. And in the aftermath of all this, you had experts weighing in saying it was not a well thought out plot. There may have been intent, but the operational, practical kind of mechanisms that would have needed to be in place, they just don't see. So what you have is this alleged conspiracy that may have had a lot of intent behind it, but not a lot of know-how.
Well, talk to me about this group called Jamaat al-Muslimin. They're named in the complaint, but they're not charged as an organization with anything, but they're named in the U.S. complaint. Tell me about this group. What's the connection to this
Jamaat al-Muslimin is a militant Islamic group based in Trinidad. It's best known for a coup attempt that it staged in 1990. The group's leader and founder, Yassin Abu Bakr, took some 150 armed followers and took over the parliament, the lone television station at the time, burned down a police headquarters. The prime minister and the cabinet were taken hostage. And this is 17 years ago, and it's still quite graphic in the minds of Trinidadians. The siege lasted 3 days, and in that time, rioting broke out. Dozens of people were killed. The coup ended, the way the coup ended, is something of a dispute. Abu Bakr will tell you he negotiated an amnesty. Since then, in these intervening 17 years, other governments have said, oh, no, we didn't, and they've gone after them. For one thing, damages and the millions of dollars for a police headquarters that had been destroyed. So he's been in and out of court for the past 17 years, and his group is said to have morphed into a criminal organization more than it has a domestic terror organization.
Like
at this
a
point.
Gang.
Another gang.
Mm-hmm.
But someone who does attract a lot of attention because they do have this Islamic overlay. For example, he was in court this week defending against charges of sedition stemming from a very sort of explosive speech that he had made in 2005.
Julie, I'm going to ask you to stand by, but I also want to bring in another voice, Chris Zambellis. He is a foreign affairs analyst affiliated with the Jamestown Foundation. He joins us on the phone here in Washington. Hi, Chris. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you. Welcome.
What does Jamaat al-Muslimin mean?
Association of Muslims.
Julie was telling us that this is a group that's been of concern in Trinidad. But what about here in the U.S.? Is this a group that's been on the U.S. radar?
Well, I would have to agree with Julia's very good assessment of the organization. Interestingly, the group hasn't been on the U.S. radar. I think since the 9/11 attacks, organizations like the Jamaat al-Muslimin that have a very narrow base of support and a narrow focus, in this case only Trinidad, have come up on the U.S. radar. But historically, the group has only acted in the Trinidadian context, and that's very, very important. And that's why I think many observers who follow the Caribbean or the group specifically were very surprised to hear their name being mentioned as part of this plot.
Now, Julie, you mentioned in your reporting that everybody involved here is not quite elderly, but these are senior citizens. You mentioned that one gentleman was a former member of parliament, and I noted in your reporting that a lot of people are just incredulous. They just think there's just no way that these particular men would either do this or have the wherewithal to do this. So, Chris, I wanted to ask you, what do you know based on your reporting? I mean, you've been following the area. You wrote a monograph about this group back in 2005. Do you think that it's possible or within the realm of credibility that these guys would be engaged in this kind of sophisticated plot?
Well, again, looking at their ages, I would say no. And I think, based on some credible reporting coming from security experts who are close to the investigation, their assessment is the same, that the plot was nowhere near operational, although there might have been some intent. Looking at the bigger picture, there were questions whether there might have been foreign involvement, whether it was Jamaat al-Muslimin or other terrorist organizations. And then come to think of it, would a viable terrorist organization want to perpetrate a plot of this scale, enlist four men in their late 50s and early 60s? To me, it's just absurd. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't some intent on their part, some resentment to act. But that's very, very different from international or other kind of involvement, using these guys as their primary operatives.
Julie, did you get a sense that this group was well-respected in Trinidad? I know you said that they are viewed as kind of a thuggish group, kind of a criminal enterprise. But what about sort of ideologically? Were they viewed as strict or pure? Did you have any sense of whether their particular vision of Islam is one that is widely shared by other Muslims in Trinidad?
From what I can tell, they attract attention because they are noisy. And they are that phrase in your face about what it is they're up to at any given moment. Having said that, this is a group that's been in a lot of trouble. I shouldn't say the group. I should say the members of the group. This is a very interesting distinction. The government, evidently, in Trinidad has been unable to actually go against the group. And what you have are cases against individuals who are drug runners or gun smugglers or involved in human trafficking or extortion. So you had a lot of you have members of this group that are sort of involved and get caught up in all that. The group itself, I would say, does not attract wide respect in Trinidad.
Chris, you started studying this group a couple of years ago. In fact, I think I read a monograph. Why did you start studying this group?
Well, it's interesting. I have a background in Middle East and South Asian politics, and I was conducting independent research on transnational Muslim identity among minority Muslim communities in the Americas. And I came across the very sizable and dynamic Muslim community of Trinidad. And as I got into my research, I learned about the Jamaat al-Muslimin, and then from there I became fascinated with the organization. You understand, it's a very obscure group, and I've been studying this topic for a long time, and I've never heard of them, and most people haven't really. They've been below the radar. I think just because they're based in the Caribbean, and we don't think of the Caribbean in this context, I think they're often ignored. But I think now they're moving up in terms of going to get much more attention from scholars and analysts.
But why? Because of this group? Because of this alleged plot? Or is it because there are people here living in the Caribbean for whatever reason are attracted to Al Qaeda's message? Or is the concern because of where it's located that it could be a gateway to the United States?
I think it's the location that's more important. There's no evidence of a nascent radical trend in the Caribbean. The Jamaat al-Muslimin is a very specific case that affects Trinidad only. But we're not seeing this in other parts of the region. And that's two different scenarios where you have, if you have a terrorist organization that might use a region as a base, it's quite different from cultivating a support base in that particular country.
Julie, what are the next steps in this case? What's going to happen now?
We're going to have a series of hearings in Trinidad throughout the summer, up until August 2nd, when the extradition proceedings will begin in earnest. These three men who are being held in Trinidad are wanted by the United States, and that's what the extradition proceeding is all about. If I could just interject one last thing, Michelle. You know, for most ordinary citizens that I talk to, it is highly unlikely for them that the Caribbean would become some sort of breeder for discontent that is aroused in Islamic fundamentalism. And for the simple reason that they say the economies of the Caribbean island nations are interwoven into the U.S. economy. They depend so much on tourism, predominantly from the United States. There are millions of islanders who made the U.S. their home. A majority of Caribbean families would have someone living in the U.S. and someone who repatriates money to them. So there are these deep economic ties, and these are deep and longstanding.
All right. Thank you so much. NPR's Julie McCarthy has been covering the story of the Jumaat al-Muslimin and the alleged terrorist plot directed at JFK Airport from the Caribbean. She spoke to us from our bureau in Rio de Janeiro. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
We were also joined by Chris Zambellas. He is affiliated with the Jamestown Foundation in Washington. He joined us on the phone. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Now we want to update a story we brought to you earlier this week. Gennaro Wilson. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison for having consensual oral sex with a 15-year-old girl at a New Year's Eve party in 2003. This week, a Georgia judge ordered his release from prison, but due to an appeal, he'll have to remain behind bars at least until a July bond hearing. Black leaders are protesting today at the Georgia State Capitol. We'd like to know what you think is fair in this case. Please visit our blog at npr.org/tellmemore.